Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn. Make sure you like this video, subscribe on YouTube, share with your friends, check out calibrateministries.com for some more resources. Today, we have a great guest with us. I'm really excited. His name is Matt Klein. Matt is the founder and director of Restored Ministries, where he focuses on leading men and women out of sexual brokenness and into a life of freedom and impact. He travels internationally and is a leading speaker and coach on biblical sexuality, and he's seen countless lives radically change around the world. So how are you doing today, Matt?
Good. I'm excited to chat with you. Thanks, Brady.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about you. You live in Canada. Canada A.
You probably bet.
Did that a lot.
You bet. Yeah.
You have a wife and kids, and so tell us about your life.
I have a wife. We've been married 8 years, and then we've got two little guys. One just turned 5, and one is two and a half, and they're fun. So I love the stage that we're at with the family, and with Restored, we started it in 2017, so it's been 6.5 years now. But I've been speaking about the porn sex for almost 10 years, it's become a passion. I always joke it when people say, "Why do you do what you do?" I say, "Well, I was in grade one and my teacher said, 'What do you want to do?' And I said, 'Talk about porn and masturbation from stages.'" That's not the truth. I was a hockey guy growing up. And then I wanted to be a business guy. So those are my two pursuits, but the Lord called me into this and gave me a passion for it. And you know, the reason why I love it so much is because we get to talk about something that very few people do. But more than that, we get to see the light of God and the love of God come into truly often the darkest areas of people's lives. And just in doing that, God transforms people. And it's not like we just draw people out of a sexual sin. It transforms an entire life when we deal with this stuff. And so I love that we get to do it. And I mean, it started for me thinking that I was just going to focus on pornography, because that was my story. It was just basically pornography for 15 years. And it's turned into, really, like you mentioned, it's sexual brokenness, whatever that entails, because there's infidelity, adultery, of course, there's pornography, there's prostitution, there's sexual abuse. I mean, there's lots and lots of different things that are all part of the sexual brokenness that we deal with. And a lot of it often has gone unsaid in people's lives. We one of the most common things we hear is, "I've never told anybody," but then they share, right? So it's pretty cool what we get to do.
Absolutely. And I mean, sexuality issues affects every single person, because we're all sexual people. And when we're living in that darkness, it affects every area of our life, because it affects our witness to the world. The enemy holds us captive by that secret. And when we're living in that mode of sexual sin, we're objectifying people. And so we can't see people as God sees them, because we see them through a lens of what they can do for us, how they make us feel, the objects that our sin turns them into. And so it affects how we can raise our kids, how we can love our spouses, how we can, you know, love our church and the people that God calls us to love.
Well, it's true. I mean, that's why it's so important, I think, to look beyond just the sexual part of our lives, because it affects us in looking at people sexually. I remember a 16-year-old kid, he's like, "I can't even have normal friendships at school. The girls I want to be friends with, I just sexualize them. And the guys I want to be friends with, they just talk like that, with that sexual jokes and stuff." He's like, it affects me. And so he wanted to deal with porn. But even outside of that, it creates shame where we don't open up to people, and it affects our relationships. And I mean, naturally, this is such an isolated, secret thing often, where people are engaging in sexual sin. And so we do hide, and that's the nature of shame, is that we isolate either physically or we isolate our soul by just not opening up to people. And so it keeps us from having rich, fruitful relationships where we are being impacted by others, and where we are impacting other people ourselves. And I used to say, nobody's being impacted by what I'm doing, right? And like what I'm doing is not hurting anybody else. And a lot of people say that. But the question we got to ask is like, who's not being blessed by your life? If you're constantly engaging in not only sin, but in shame and in condemnation towards yourself. And so there's so much value that God has on us, and we just miss it when we're engaged in sexual sin.
Absolutely. I one of the stories that everyone knows is Jesus and the woman in the well. And after she was exposed and experienced grace, she went and told everyone about what she'd experienced with Jesus. And that's what happens when we take away these layers of shame and experience grace, is that we have a witness in the world. And so, yeah, so you're absolutely right. It's not about like, well, this isn't really affecting anyone. It is. It's affecting whoever you're objectifying in your mind or on the screen, but it's also affecting how you can witness to the world and the hope that you're experiencing that you then have to offer or don't have to offer to your community and the people around you.
Totally, totally. And you know what is essential in that story? It's in John 4. And so in John 4, Jesus speaks to the woman and he says, I have living water for you. If you drink this living water, you'll never thirst again. But in John 7, three chapters later, he speaks to someone and he's like, hey, the living water that's within you will flow out from you. And so we need to have this encounter where we experience God's living water, his love, to come and wash us clean. And then from there, he will work powerfully to impact other people. But the way that she experienced this living water, so to speak, from Jesus, was he said that he had it. And she was like, man, that sounds pretty good. Like, how do I get this water? And if you read the story, he doesn't even answer her question. He says, hey, go get your husband. That's his direct response to, hey, I want this living water. How can I get it? He goes, go get your husband. And what I think is cool in that response is that if you picture it, like she's from this one city. They're not in the city. They're at this well outside of the city. She could have done what so many of us do and hide. She could have said to Jesus, okay, I'll go get my husband and go back to the city where she lives and never come back to Jesus. She could have just went and hid. But instead, Jesus was handing her an opportunity saying, hey, are you going to be open? Are you going to be honest with where you're at? And she took that opportunity. She's like, you know, I don't have a husband. And he's like, you're right. You've had five husbands. You've been divorced five times. Now you're living with a man, the sixth man you're not married to. And she's like, oh my gosh, like this man knows everything about me. Everybody should come meet this guy. But the essential turning point for me is when he says, hey, go get your husband. Because she has a choice to make in that moment. I want this living water, but do I want it badly enough that I'm going to be open with this guy about the shame and the junk in my life? And she took that and it turned into a whole city getting to meet the Messiah.
At Calibrate Ministries, we have an entire ministry just for parents of LGBTQ kids, because we want to be able to shepherd your hearts and encourage you and pray for you and your family as you navigate these situations. So just go to calibrateministries.com and fill out the contact form, and I'd love to be in touch with you about how you can be involved in that ministry. So as we engage with our churches, most of our listeners are Christians. What steps can we take as Christians to build a culture in our church where, and in our just our community, where we can take off the mask and invite other people to do so? You know, there's so many times within our churches, it's like the statistics show that half of our guys in the church are still addicted to porn. And so obviously they're not in a place where they're ministering to others because they're hiding it themselves. And so we need to build a culture that is safe and healthy and invites people in to experience the living water. What are some steps we can take within our Christian communities to do that?
Well, that's a great question. And honestly, I think that if churches grabbed hold of this one thing, I think the whole church culture would shift, not just sexually. I think in every way it would be impacted. So it's a very, very important thing. In Ezekiel 34, there's actually a rebuke to the shepherds of Israel. And what the rebuke is that you just care about your own comfort. And he says, you're not caring for the wounds of your sheep. And so how I picture that is that pastors, there's one story, a pastor said, well, it's just not my personality to talk about sex. He's not willing to be uncomfortable. He's caring about his own comfort. And so he doesn't do it. They're not caring for the wounds of their sheep. And so what I think is like we preach on prayer, we preach on worship, evangelism, whatever it might be. But what about the actual wound? Like we're feeding a sheep the grass and the water, whatever that they need to survive, but they've got a wound on their back leg and we're neglecting to care for that. If we don't care for that wound, it's going to eventually get affected and affect the whole body. And that's what happens with sexual sin. And so there's a reason, there's a rebuke. It's because we do neglect caring for these essential wounds. And this pastor that said to me, oh, it's not my personality, he actually said, he's like, they do some work with the church down the street from them. And he was like, those guys, though, they talk about sex because they do once a year. And so it was a couple of years after this that this pastor said this to me, where one guy from his church came to us for help for his porn addiction. And on the second day that he reached out, like the day after he started getting help from us, his wife said, hey, our marriage is done. There's no hope. You've gone too far with this. And so now they're separated or divorced. And I just think, what if that pastor was uncomfortable and willing to address this a few years before? Could that marriage be saved? And could those kids grow up in a home where their parents weren't divorced? On the flip side, the church that I go to now, it's a bigger church, at least in Canadian standards. It's a bigger church. We don't have the big mega churches like you do in the States, but you know, the pastor, we had only been there a few months, and he's like, Matt, I want to do an interview with you because I'm preaching about pornography. And so he did this interview with me. It was only a small portion of the service, but then he shared on pornography, and he was vulnerable with his own story. This guy, he's in his 40s. He's vulnerable. He's like, you know, I've dealt with porn in my life, but I'm also still careful. I'm also still aware that that I could fall, that I'm a man. I've got protective things in place. I've got accountability in my life. And he was just honest in front of his larger congregation, and he was willing to be vulnerable in that way. And then he pointed to a resource. And from that, I mean, that was months and months ago. I still have people reaching out saying, hey, I heard about you from that sermon that Pastor Mike did. And I'm like, how incredible that a pastor was actually willing to preach on pornography, not just say, hey, we shouldn't engage in porn and move on in a sermon, but actually have a topic, a sermon fully on pornography, because it's an epidemic in this world. And then he pointed to a resource, and it wasn't uncomfortable. It was like, everybody knows it's an issue. Everybody knows it.
It shouldn't be uncomfortable. It should be, this is a normal part of our church culture, is we talk about the issues that are affecting people. And so we have to just normalize that we're going to talk about all sin issues because they're affecting you, and we want to lead you to the living water. And that starts from the top. And many times I have pastors who will say, like, oh, we're not going to handle that from the pulpit. We'll handle it more in relationships and small groups. But I find that if it's not talked about from the pulpit, it usually doesn't come out in relationships and small groups, because people don't feel like this is a church where we can talk about those things. So they continue to live in shame and in the guilt and never find hope because they haven't built the church culture in which this is okay to talk about, and this is actually life-giving to talk about, and this is a place where I can be honest and real. And probably the person who's addicted is not joining the small groups because they're afraid, they have walls up, and like, we don't want to go there. So it starts from the top, and it starts from the pulpit and building a culture of vulnerability.
It does. It's true. Think about what Jesus did in Matthew 5. He talks about lust. He doesn't put brackets around those few verses about lust and go, just whisper when you talk about it. Only on a Tuesday night in a back room, we talk about this. Like, he talked about it like he talked about anything else. And, you know, people will often say to me, like, man, good for you for doing that ministry. Like, that's such a taboo thing. And I'm like, it's only taboo if we don't talk about it. It's not sex is not taboo in scripture. It is right there for us to see. And so we do need to talk about it. And you know, for us to think that it's got to be awkward or uncomfortable, it is so sad, because sex is a beautiful gift from God. It's powerful. 1 Thessalonians 4 talks about it's his will for us to be sanctified, and it goes right directly into, so abstain from sexual immorality. And so if we want to disciple our people to be sanctified and be more like Christ, we have to talk about this, because there's a real power in understanding how to control our bodies and our sexuality. And so there's so many good ways to talk about it where we can be confident and celebrate the sex drives that God has given us, because they're good. And so, it's important. But I want to say too, like, if your pastor is not willing to do it, or you just don't see this being addressed, you can have a meeting with your pastor and just say, hey, like, this is my story. I think it'd be helpful if we did something. Like, would you be open to starting a group, or could we do a workshop or something? There's a ministry, a local ministry, or we could fly someone in or whatever. So lay people could do it too. And we have a guy right now, and there's multiple of these guys actually, but one guy just last week, he reached out. He's like, hey, I went to my pastors. They didn't want to do it. But then I went to another church down in his town, met with that pastor. The pastor's like, yeah, absolutely, let's address this. And so now they're starting a group. And so he's working with me just because they use our resources and whatever, but there's lots of resources to use. And so even if your pastor's not wanting to do it, but you feel like God putting that on your heart, you can try and do what you can to take a stand for this too.
Absolutely. So here's a question for you. I know that when we talk about sexual sin in the church, many times we talk about it as a men's issue, but you not only work to help men find freedom, but women also. And I think that's so important, because there's so many women who struggle too. And so let's talk about that some. How do you engage this issue with both genders? And what do you see women struggling with? And how can we have a culture in which we understand that this affects everyone and not just men?
Yeah, well, I like what you say. It starts from the top, and that is important. When we talk about it being a men's issue, or like, oh, man, people hear what we do and they just assume. They're like, oh, I'll talk to my men's ministry guy, or like, oh, man, men need that. And so that language is not helpful for women, because, I mean, Pornhub and different sites, they'll say a third of their traffic comes from women. It's the fastest growing demographic for porn users is women. We had a conference, third year of our ministry, we had a conference, and I remember all these women coming to us and saying, hey, thank you for helping the people addicted, but I'm the spouse, my husband's addicted, and now what about me? Like, what is there for the wife? And so there's got to be that aspect talked about too. And that was kind of when I became more passionate about the wives aspect and finding resources for that. But I think that it's got to be gender specific. Like, if women can help women, men can help men. That's what we've seen to be the most effective, for mm-hmm. sure.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And so when a couple is struggling, or when there's sexual sin come out in their marriage, we always encourage, and people have different thoughts, but we've seen it work way better where a man gets help from men, a woman gets help from women. And then eventually, at some point, it doesn't have to be years down the road, but at some point, then they come together and they work on their marriage. But oftentimes the marriage kind of naturally gets better when each person is getting healthy and they can be fully honest with somebody. Because there's things that we can say to others that we don't necessarily want to say to our spouse, when it can be extremely hurtful. And then we can learn and get counsel on how to bring things to our spouse in effective ways. And so we find it very helpful to do gender specific coaching and then bring couples together. And one thing that we do too with our main program, our video resources, is people go through it, and then whatever work that they go through in the video resources or through coaching, then they can bring that to their spouse, and it builds that intimacy. And so that's a really effective way to involve both genders in the process of healing. But it is just important to realize we all have sex drives. It's not like only a man has a sex drive. We all do. And speaking about it like it's a man's issue, number one, shames a woman into thinking like, oh, this is bad enough. Now I'm getting told it's just for men. And also, it's just telling her there's no help for me, and we need to provide help for women. So thankfully, there are more and more ministries coming up for women specifically hooked on pornography. And I think it's important from the top down to include them in the conversation.
Yes, absolutely. That's great. And I think we need a church culture in which women believe that reconciliation can happen. I think as I've counseled a lot of couples, what has happened is when the woman seeks wise counsel, it's like an attitude of, oh, your husband's a loser and you're the victim. And it becomes, no, men and women, we all have our issues with it, especially within church culture. And for women, it can be putting their husbands down. It's kind of like they get together and it's like, oh, who's a contest of whose husband is worst? And so that can be a really healthy, unhealthy dynamic that we need to guard against. And then on the men's side too, we need to make sure as men, when we get together, we're treating our spouses with honor and respect. It's like, we don't, you know, have a contest on whose wife is the most naggy, you know, like men tend to do, and it's ridiculous. It's like, no, we talk about our wives with honor and respect. And when our spouse is caught in sin, we need people around us who believe in reconciliation, who believe in restoration, who will help us process how are we responding and how is our response in line with the gospel and how do we move towards the gospel in our relationship and in our marriage instead of causing more of a divide by how we're responding. And so when our spouse is struggling, we need shepherding ourselves. We need shepherding towards the gospel and how to apply the gospel in our marriage and make sure we're not surrounding ourselves by people who are making the gap even bigger between us and our spouse.
You nailed it. It's head on. We play the victim, or we play the game, who's the bigger victim, right? Whose spouse is worse? And you just complain. Yes. You know, it's just so not like God. It's the total opposite of God. And I, you know, this is an opportunity. I always tell both spouses, it's an opportunity to, and I like your wording, apply the gospel to your marriage, to actually become like Jesus. Because haven't we all betrayed Jesus? We've all strayed. And he, no matter what, he pursues us and he constantly wants relationship with us. And you look at Jesus' response to sinners. I mean, the woman at the well is one. The woman caught in adultery is another. The woman in Luke 7, who's known as a sinner, is another. Like, his response to sinners, it's remarkable, and so much grace, but also a high expectation for them to not live a life of sin. And in marriage, you have an opportunity to become like Jesus. You have an opportunity to learn how to forgive more than ever. You have an opportunity to learn how to live in his grace, even though you've screwed up, more than ever. And so on both sides, we have an opportunity to become more like Jesus through this process. And if we just live in victimhood or bitterness, and we just point out flaws in the other, but we don't look at the plank in our own eye, we're not becoming like Jesus, but we also literally aren't seeing things correctly. Like it says in that scripture, if you don't deal with the plank in your own eye, but you just try to deal with the speck in your brother's eye or your spouse's eye, it says you need to deal with your own stuff, because otherwise you can't see clearly. It says once you deal with your own stuff, then you can see clearly to deal with your spouses. So this applies for sexual betrayal. When sexual sin is in a marriage, if you're only about what your spouse has done wrong, you're literally biblically not seeing things clearly. And so we have to look at our own stuff and realize that God's grace is for me and therefore it's for others. And then we can all become more like Christ in this process. So yeah, I love what you're saying, that reconciliation is possible. And we do need to believe that and have that be part of the church culture.
I have pastors and church leaders regularly reach out to me about speaking at their churches and events. If that's something you would be interested in, feel free to go to calibrateministries.com and fill out the contact form, and I'd love to talk to you about what that would look like. So here's another question. So we're going all kinds of places today. So you had told me that about half the guys who do your program deal with same-sex attraction. And so, you know, I talk a lot about LGBTQ issues. I've dealt with same-sex attraction myself. I left that lifestyle about 15 years ago. And so usually churches have me come in specifically to talk about homosexuality. And I try to build a bigger vision there of biblical sexuality and not just homosexuality. But that's kind of my wheelhouse. And so what encouragement would you give to guys dealing with same-sex attraction? What are the similarities and parallels with them and guys with opposite sex attraction? And then what are some differences that we should be aware of? How do you maybe minister in them a little differently or see some of their unique burdens? There's unique burdens that are difficult for them. And so how can we have that be a part of the conversation and understand that in some ways, they're no different than everyone else. And in some ways, they might have some unique needs and burdens that we're called to bear with them.
Yeah, great question. And I love that you do what you do because, man, I mean, people say porn is taboo. Like that's something where people don't know what to do with it often in churches. And it's sad that that's the reality. We have we call it Pure Freedom Community. It's an online community that's free for guys over 18 to come in. And so there's people that are in our paid programs and people that are just in the community. But they send me messages every once in a while. So last week I was looking at the previous messages or like the most recent messages that I had gotten. And the six most recent messages, all of them were same-sex attracted. Some were like you, they were full in the gay lifestyle and came out. And then others never engaged in it, but just have had a lifelong the factor of same-sex attraction in their life. So it's a real thing. And you know what, one of the main differences, as I'm sure you know, is that there's just often an added level of shame for these guys because, man, I deal with lust, but it's like it's same-sex lust, or I deal with porn, but it's same-sex porn. And you know, talking in a group of guys, some guys will say, like, you know, I can talk about porn, but I'm not going there because I'm the only one, and what are people going to think? And so that added level of shame, that just breaks my heart because I don't want it to be there. I understand logically why people can feel that, but I'm like, man, sexual sin is sexual sin. And if somebody has same-sex attraction, they actually could sin less than somebody like me who was only attracted to the opposite sex. If I'm constantly lusting after someone, I could be in more sin than someone who's same-sex attracted but stewards that well.
Yeah. So the other day I was talking to someone and he dealt with same-sex attraction. He was in a small group at his church, a men's group. And so, you know, they were talking and he confessed that he had looked at porn for the first time in a year. Of course, it was gay porn. And so there's a lot of shame there. Well, then the guy next to him confessed, like, I looked at porn this week too, but at least it was straight porn. He actually said that out loud, that at least it was straight porn. Well, it's like the guy who confessed to straight porn, he was also married. And so he was like impacting his wife in deep ways. So it's like, it's some of those things that we say as Christians, like that the church has done a lot to add levels of shame. And so it's so tragic when guys with same-sex attraction feel so much more shame because their struggle is with the same sex. It's like we as the church have done a lot to pile on those levels of shame. And that conversation, that small group is the prime example of that.
Yeah, that is a prime example, and that's very sad. And it just speaks to the ignorance of it, the ignorance of the prevalence of same-sex attraction. We in the church, we don't understand it. We don't understand how many people in our congregation have this silent battle that they don't know where to go with it. And it is a real thing. But I love how you're talking about, you speak more to the broader issue of biblical sexuality. It's not about, hey, you should never be attracted to someone of the same sex. Ideally, yeah, I mean, God has a design for our sexuality, of course. There's husband and wife, there's a man and woman in marriage, like that's ideal, but things do get perverted and you know, how much polygamy is there in the world? How much adultery is there in the world? There's bestiality, there's child pornography, there's all the different things like stepdads abusing stepdaughters, like all these things we deal with personally in our ministry. And like, what's worse? I don't know. It's all bad. And it all falls short of the grace of God, but it all is it's not too far for the grace of God. It is all there. And so Speaking about like biblical sexuality is, he says to be holy because I am holy. And let's just pursue holiness. 1 Thessalonians 4 that I referred to is like, learn to control your body in a way that's holy and that honors God. And let's not fall into sexual immorality. So no matter what our bent is, biblical sexuality or stewarding our sexuality in a godly way is the goal. The goal shouldn't be like, hey, if you're same-sex attracted, let's totally change that, make you opposite-sex attracted, and then you're still sinning there. that's not the goal. Yeah. It's how do you steward a biblical?
I've always said that I don't want to trade homosexual lust for heterosexual lust. That will get me nowhere in the kingdom of heaven. That shouldn't be the goal. And so the goal is to find wholeness with Christ, not to trade one type of lust for another.
Totally. And as you know, a lot of this, or even I might even be able to say most of it or all of it, points to deeper things. And so whether it's a lack of understanding of what it looks like to have a life of surrender, of dying to yourself, that could be same-sex attraction, opposite-sex attraction. It doesn't matter. If we're engaging in lust, maybe we don't know how to actually die to ourselves. Maybe there's issues from past abuse or being sexually violated in some way, being exposed to things when you're 4 years old that your camera kind of takes it, or your mind takes a snapshot of it like a camera and remembers it, and that alters your sexual development. I mean, there's different things like neglect from parents, abuse from parents, whatever. All of these things are factors. And, you know, some of the guys that we deal with who are same sex, like sexually abused by, say, a brother, they turn out with same sex attraction. But some of them, they're abused by a brother and they run the opposite way. And they're very promiscuous because they're trying to prove to themselves and everyone else that they're not gay. And, you know, whatever the response is, it points to the hurt and it points to the trauma that has to be dealt with. And that's important to understand.
Absolutely. And now I find that sometimes we need a little more holistic approach to dealing with sexual sin, because sometimes we have the attitude, we have to get this person to a perfect place with sexual sin, and that's the only thing we focus on in their life. And so it's like, no, it's one aspect of their life where they need the gospel and they need some transformation, but it's also, there's many other places where they need to grow. So let's try to grow in all areas of our life and our relationship with God. And many of these issues are so interconnected in our lives, our past hurts and trauma and pain and the lies that we have believed about ourselves and about God. And so instead of just focusing on the outward symptom, which many times is our sexual desires that are unholy, we need to focus on just many areas of our life where we need to find wholeness in Christ. And then the outward symptoms sometimes, you know, take care of themselves, and we can grow in all areas, which then helps all areas and see it a little more holistically than just that one area of someone's life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll often say that I think porn freedom can be an idol for people, because if you're porn free, then you're going to be okay. It's like, no, there's so many different things to address in life where Christ wants to bring wholeness and healing. And so it's not just about getting a sin out of your life. And in fact, if you do that, but your mind is not renewed and your heart is not healthy, you're susceptible to falling back into sin, but also like into sexual sin, but also you're probably doing other things, or maybe you're living in pride and
you've just transferred your idolatry from one area to another instead of actually dealing with the heart.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. I remember I was about 20 or so, and maybe 18 or 19. And in Canada, you can go to casinos when you're 18. So that was never a part of my family at all. But I was 18 and a buddy called me up, hey, do you want to go to the casino? I'm like, sure. So I went, and I got pretty addicted to it for like a year. And so I would go for a week and I would never watch porn. But then I would like, oh man, I shouldn't do this. And so I'd stop going, but then I'd watch porn for that week. And I noticed this transference happening. But there's two things that we try to tackle and focus on mostly in our ministry is healing the heart and renewing the mind. And in Romans 12, it talks about you're transformed by the renewal of the mind. But in 1 Peter 4:1, it links it directly to sin because it says that when you suffer in the body, if you arm yourself with the attitude, the same way of thinking that Christ had, then sin will just cease in the body. And so we keep trying to get sin to cease, but we never arm ourselves. Think about it, like it's actual armor when you think like Christ. And so we have to renew the mind and go, how does Jesus actually even view temptation? A lot of us are terrified of temptation. I don't think Jesus ever was. And there's a way to renew our mind to think about things like Jesus did. And then secondly, with the heart, Proverbs 4:23 says that above all else, think about that statement, above all else, we should guard our heart. For from it flows the tree of life, or everything that you do flows from it. And so we try to focus on the second part, everything we do. But what about guarding your heart above all else? How do we actually do that? And so having a healthy heart and then renewing your mind to think like Christ, those are the two areas that we need to focus on mostly. And then as you said, and as scripture says, sin kind of just ceases when we have that approach.
Absolutely. Wow, that's a really great word, Matt. All right, we are running out of time for today. I so much appreciate your wisdom and your ministry. It feels like sometimes speaking on biblical sexuality, it's a little lonely sometimes because there's not a lot of us who do it. And so I so much appreciate fellowship with a brother like you who's in the midst of the battle also and helping so many people. How can people connect to your resources and your ministry?
Sure. Yeah, it's true. Eh? In Canada, there's really two of us that do it on a larger scale. So it is sometimes a lonely battle, but I appreciate connecting with you. Restoredministries.ca is the website. So all the support programs are there. And then on Instagram, Restored Sexuality is the handle. We don't post every day, but we're still there. And so people are always sending DMs and stuff like that and connecting. And then Pure Victory Podcast is where we have our podcast, and it's Restored Ministries on YouTube. So there's a few places. Also, I want to say too,
awesome. That we'll put all those links in the description.
Yeah, and also the community for guys. If you want to, it's just for people wanting to grow in sexual integrity. You don't have to have a porn addiction, but if you're a man over 18, you can join Pure Freedom Community. You can find it at the website.
Awesome. All right. I appreciate you so much, Matt. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to all of our listeners for joining us today. Make sure you check out calibrateministries.com. And again, find some resources there. There's some great topics on the podcast. So check out some previous episodes. And we will hope to see you next week. Thank you.